What does possibility mean to you?
That's a hard question.
Something that you can strive for.
That I'm able to do anything I set my mind to.
You're confident in yourself and you believe in yourself. Stuff that you could achieve.
I feel excited. Anything is possible when you're more confident.
Shoes are a huge part of that. They are the most important part of my style.
You can like express yourself in the right shoes.
Anything is possible.
DSW, countless shoes at brag-worthy prices. Imagine the possibilities.
I'm John Batchelor with Troy Senek. His new book is A Man of Iron, The Turbulent Life and Improbable Presidency of Grover Cleveland. Heretofore, we've concentrated on what we call domestic politics, price stability, inflation, deflation, and there's national deflation in that second term that is far more alarming than the inflation they thought they were dealing with. However, there's also the contest over what Mark Twain will call imperialism. Imperialism will show itself again and again in the Spanish War at the end of this decade under McKinley and Teddy Roosevelt. But it begins with episodes, as far as I can understand, in the Cleveland's time over three far-flung pieces of real estate. We'll begin with the story of Nicaragua. They're looking for what will eventually become the Panama Canal. How does Cleveland acquit himself when it comes to the question of the adventurism in Nicaragua?
He can't bring himself to support it. This is something that he inherits from the Arthur administration. There's a treaty to build something similar, if not precisely the same, as what becomes the Panama Canal across Nicaragua. And it's important to understand why he can't abide it. He actually likes the idea. He understands the inherent value of a transoceanic canal. The reason he can't sign off on it is because the terms of this agreement would lead Nicaragua to be an American protectorate. And Cleveland does not think that the wisdom of the founding fathers on foreign policy needs any updating. So to his mind, anything that implicates the United States in a permanent relation with an international power, where we would have that kind of responsibility for Nicaragua, he can't abide. So this is the reason that he leaves that treaty behind and that we end up having to wait a few decades until we get this transoceanic canal and, huge change that it ends up precipitating.
And the challenge of foreign policy for Cleveland, given that he sees his role as delimited from what we understand today, does he believe that he has a free hand in it without Congress interfering? Does he follow the idea of the Monroe Doctrine as his to enforce?
Well, it depends on which issue you're talking about. He definitely thinks he has a freer hand on foreign policy than he does on domestic issues. But there are instances in his presidency where he comes up to a line, for instance, with Hawaii, which I'm sure we'll talk about in a moment, where he says, this is on Congress now. I have gone to the extent that my powers will allow. But he is quite aggressive in defending the Monroe Doctrine. And this is the case most notably in a case in his second term in Venezuela, where there is a border dispute with Britain. And Britain is consistently defining the borders of its imperial possessions there wider and wider and wider, to the point where the Cleveland administration takes the position that, well, this is a de facto violation of the Monroe Doctrine. You are expanding your claims so broadly that it essentially constitutes a new claim. And this leads to a lot of diplomatic tensions between the U.S. and Britain, almost boiling over to the point where people are concerned about war. Britain then gets distracted by some other foreign challenges in Europe. And at the end of the day, this all ends up going to arbitration. But it is part and parcel with what you see in the second term, which is a little bit more aggressive stance from Cleveland on these foreign policy questions.
He doesn't really have an army and a navy to project power as we understand it in the 21st century. In fact, wasn't the Secretary of the Navy under the first administration so ill-informed that he resigned after he was challenged by the Secretary of the Treasury? It's a whopper of a story. Can you help me remember it, Troy?
The story is right. The players are slightly off. So it is an assistant secretary, but it is the secretary doing the challenging. When Cleveland's Navy secretary comes in the first term, actually, I take it back. I don't think it was an assistant secretary. I think it was even more junior than that. His secretary comes in very concerned about the state of the Navy. In fact, there is a lot of work done in both Cleveland administrations to start creating a modern Navy. And one of the things that they're concerned about is that there's just a lot of layabout, you know, spoil system employees there. And so Cleveland's Navy secretary masters the details sufficiently that when his junior employees can't answer his questions, that's when you get to this story. The one who is so humiliated by the fact that he can't respond properly that he then turns around and resigns.
You've mentioned Venezuela. This has to do with the conflict with England, with Great Britain. But it is in general the conflict with Europe at the time that dominates the story. There's another instance where Bismarck has taken possession of Samoa. This is the colonial outreach into the Pacific that still very much influences our decision-making about Oceania, this vast conference. Did Cleveland, who didn't travel as president, I understand, did he regard the German militarism or the English presumptiveness or the European powers, did he regard them as a threat to the United States as they colonized Africa, as they colonized the Pacific?
Not directly to the what we now call the homeland of the United States, but he is just as forceful about foreign countries not making incursions into these places as he is to the United States not making incursions in them. So the situation in Samoa, which actually happens in the first term, there was a what they called a tripartite protectorate. The U.S., the U.K., and Germany all had a piece there. And the Germans start moving at this point to essentially overthrow the monarchy and move the country in a direction that is much more German-inflected. And this is the most aggressive military leadership in Cleveland's two terms. He actually sends American warships over there. The Germans eventually back off. But he has no truck with that kind of intrusion in these affairs of foreign countries in the same way that he does not want the United States to be doing it.
Yes, and now the United States does it. That's what's so striking. We come to the 50th state, Hawaii. Yeah. And the chronology here is a disgrace, and Cleveland felt it. He regarded the whole thing as shameful. It's very quickly what happens is that the Hawaiian Islands are dominated by American planters. Much of it is owned. And the Hawaiian kingdom, which will pass from a king to a queen, resents and refutes the American domination. Cleveland is president during the time of this confrontation. And yet he can't stop it? Is that the way we regard this, Troy?
Yeah, more or less. He inherits this. So when this uprising happens in Hawaii that overthrows the monarchy, it happens with the assent of the American ambassador. But this is the American ambassador in the Harrison administration. This is the dying days of Benjamin Harrison's presidency before Cleveland returns to office. We should note, it does not happen with the explicit endorsement of the Harrison administration, because in that day and age, these people were so far removed from Washington that you could get away with an awful lot without Washington having, you know, their thumb on the scales. Cleveland is, as you say, is horrified by this. This is to him entirely counter to what the United States of America is about. The idea that we would play a role in the overthrow of a sovereign government out in the middle of the Pacific. But the reason that he is unable to do much about it is that too much time has passed. The queen has been overthrown. The new government has taken over. Cleveland sends diplomatic representatives to try to work out an accommodation. It's just as simple as the new government will not deal. So the only thing that the United States could do at that point would be to send military forces to Hawaii to restore the status quo ante. Well, Congress is not as upset about it as Cleveland is, and Cleveland can't do this without Congress. So he writes a very touching, very beautiful, and very pained letter to Congress explaining his unhappiness with all of this and his disappointment at some level with the country for being party to this. But it is ultimately Congress's decision, and they do nothing. So this government exists independently in Hawaii for a few years, and then the U.S. ends up annexing it a few years later under the McKinley administration, partially on a strategic justification during the Spanish-American War.
And that record, as you unearth it to me in your telling, is highly, highly shameful, highly shameful. The planters stole Hawaii from the people who lived there. And there was, to my reading, there was no compensation. Is that correct, Troy? We didn't pay them.
That's correct. And also a more restrictive form of government. The voting rights were curtailed for people who had voting rights under the Hawaiian system. It's not necessarily the case that the monarchy was perfect. The monarchy was illiberal in a lot of respects and inefficient in many respects, but it was still Hawaii's government. And the United States, at least under cover of our ambassador at the time, interposed itself here in a way that, as we now know, would never be reversed.
And you see how the foreshadowing here of what will be the Spanish-American War and the grab of a piece of Cuba that we have today, Guantanamo, and the Philippines protectorate, all of that is established as how to do it during Cleveland's second term, and McKinley and Roosevelt will follow on accordingly. We're going to turn to Cleveland after the presidency next, because it's both moving and revelatory of how future presidents learn from Grover Cleveland. The book is A Man of Iron, The Turbulent Life and Improbable Presidency of Grover Cleveland. Troy Senek is the author. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
I'm Mo Rocca, and it's been a while. But I've been busy digging up even more stories about the people and things of the past that are fascinating me now.
What did your father think of the label, of the whole idea of the Latin lover?
From the screen idols who redefined Hollywood's leading man.
I think it was a love-hate relationship. My dad hated the word macho.
That's what I call the Latin lover type of a role, which is one-dimensional.
To the dog who introduced millions of kids to classic literature.
I remember, like, on my 10th birthday, I think it was, we were going to go mini golfing, and I insisted, but we had to stay home for Wishbone first.
Listen to Mobituaries wherever you get your podcasts.
Now to exclusive reporting from CBS News.
Join Gail King, Tony DeCoppel, and Nate Burleson for original reporting. CBS Mornings, weekday mornings on CBS.
Over the past few years, the COVID-19 pandemic has affected how we live our daily lives. Today, we also face a mental health pandemic that threatens our well-being as we attempt to rebuild our social networks and communities.
The pandemic has reminded us to value family, community, and our human connections. However, it has also left many of us feeling more isolated, confused, and alone, struggling to find meaning amid loss and uncertainty.
Today, 1 in 5 Americans experience emotional and mental health challenges. But many of us do not understand what we are facing or know how to ask for help.
At the American Psychiatric Association Foundation, we understand what you are going through, and we are here to help. Our vision is to build a mentally healthy nation for all. We work every day to eliminate stigma, combat mental illness and substance use disorders, and advance mental health. If you or someone you love needs help, you are not alone. Please visit mentallyhealthynation.org to learn more.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
Hey everyone, this is Carrie Champion, the host of Naked Sports.
The all-new 2025 Nissan Armada Pro4X provides freedom. Freedom to explore, to go wherever you want, with your whole crew and all your toys. With a twin-turbo V6 engine, 8,500 pounds of towing capacity, and seating for 8, this unshakable fortress of a vehicle is built to take you on your next adventure. Drive the all-new 2025 Nissan Armada today. Learn more at NissanUSA.com. Intelligent four-wheel drive cannot prevent collisions or provide enhanced traction in all conditions. Always monitor traffic and weather conditions.
This message is sponsored by Greenlight. With school out, summer is the perfect time to teach our kids real-world money skills they'll use forever. Greenlight is a debit card and the number one family finance and safety app used by millions of families, helping kids learn how to save, invest, and spend wisely. Parents can send their kids money and track their spending and saving, while kids build money confidence and skills in fun ways. Start your risk-free Greenlight trial today at greenlight.com/iHeart. That's greenlight.com/iHeart.